All right, it's time for Insights on the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrow. How are you feeling today? We have a reprieve of the incredible, oppressively hot heat wave, number two or three, I think we're on. It looks like it's not going to let up for another 4 or 5 days. But I say, hey, when in Rome, bring it on. Before we know it, old man winter is going to be breathing down our neck, right? Hey, thank you so much for all the emails last week. On the segment we did, actually, I got emails about several segments, but most particular about the emails about the community bike shop, about Jack being such a great guy, and how important it is to have a pillar of the community in an industry, in any industry, actually, in a town that just serves the people well on many levels, as a mentor, as someone who's just a grounded person who just does the right thing for businesses, for its clientele, for the community, and so much more. I really liked your feedback, and I really liked the stories that you shared as well in terms of either a similar bike shop story, the local, someone told me from Canada, actually, that they had a similar situation in a bakery when they were growing up, and a few other emails. So thank you very much for sharing those. I love to get those that information and feedback, and always send your information or comments and all that stuff to Mark at markfarrellmotivation.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, at markfarrellmotivation.com. Got a great show your way. Going to meet an incredible person who's been contributing a great deal to the special needs population. Gary Shulman is a special needs consultant and trainer nationally, but his home is here in New York City, and so I didn't have to cajole him too much to come into a nice, cool studio this morning. Great. Who doesn't want to hang out in a nice, cool, air-conditioned studio when the subways are Africa hot? Anyway, we're going to meet Gary in a bit. His passion has always been bringing relief to families of children with disabilities, as well as to the professionals to support them. He does trainings. He does workshops. He's just an incredible person with 30 to 40 years of experience, and I greatly look up to him as well for myself, who's been in this field as a speaker to people with disabilities and mainstream only for 4 or 5 years, but he has a lot to offer. So have you been watching the Olympics? I bet you have, right? Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Last night was a little bit of a sleeper compared to all the swimming competitions, but I want to talk to you about the sponsors. And one of them is Citibank. And Citi has been doing a series of ads that I'm very, very impressed with. Now, of course, you can think about, you know, the macro picture of it. It's big business and how they are kind of slapping their logos on the sport that's supposed to be about sport, humanity, et cetera, across all the continents. But you know what? The reality is the Olympics is big business. If you don't think so, you need to do a reality check, because we're going to do this later in the show. I'm going to kind of dissect the Olympics a little bit, because as much I'm not a Pollyannish-ish guy, but I'm a realist. And but the reality is Citibank is doing a great bunch of ads, and one of them is about why the Citi sponsor Team USA. And here's the copy. It says, at Citi, our business isn't training athletes. Our products don't keep muscles warm, and we don't design prosthetics. So why do we sponsor the U.S. Paralympic team? Because our business is helping Americans everywhere meet the challenges of competing on the global stage. Hit that music again, Jesse. There we go. We got to keep that just positive feeling. Can you see the cauldron? A glow? Can you feel the heat of that cauldron? Yes, I can. Anyway, so their ads are incredible. I have about 4 or 5 of them, and they're really well done. Of course, featuring all Paralympic athletes from the U.S., from Canada, and from different countries. And it's extremely well done on many levels, because it's not pandering. It's treating people with disabilities the way they should be treated, the same way the ads for the Olympics are treating the athletes, just with respect and pride and giving them a platform to shine. And I think that's what it's all about. Now, another thing I want to present to you, you can keep that music going because I love it, because I feel inspired. I feel like I need to do the 100 meter whatever. Yeah, I'm watching the Olympics. I can't even pronounce all the words. I'm not a track person, I should say that, but I love swimming competitions. As a matter of fact, it's inspired my family to have family swim night each and every night this week. I never realized my wife was such a good swimmer, doing a freestyle, and it's actually empowered her to go out and swim every night, which is good. Anyway, so there's an ad that a company in Canada has made promoting the Paralympics. Now, the Paralympics, as you know, starts September 7th, and it always follows the Olympics, which is a whole nother topic that, you know, I've spoken to you about before, that it's something that I have a great deal of difficulty with because, number one, I think it's just giving, behind the shadow of the Olympics. I think it's a great way to draw attention. I think the Paralympics, as much as the Olympics, are incredibly compelling on so many levels because of the athleticism, determination, and everything else you can think of. But the Paralympics just raise that to the highest degree possible. If you've ever seen a person in a wheelchair play basketball, volleyball, wheelchair tennis, weightlifting, powerlifting, swimming, it is unfathomable. It is, you just are in complete awe. It's the best movie you've ever seen when you walk out of it. You know that feeling you get? Multiply that a few times, and that's the feeling you get when you watch the Paralympics. Anyway, so very quickly, I digress that I always feel that it should precede the Olympics because it's a great ramp up. First of all, for the host country, it's a great ramp up and a dry run for, you know, I think it's about 5,000 people, 3,000 to 5,000 people for the Paralympics on an average, you know, tier basis. But for the Olympics, it's, you know, 15, 20 with all the different teams and managers, sponsors, et cetera. So it's a great dry run. So anyway, this advertising agency in Canada made an incredible trailer for the Paralympics. Now, I don't know if this is airing on TV. I'm sorry, I'm remiss in saying that. It is airing on Canadian TV. Now, it's a three-minute piece. So could you imagine the price tag of that airing here in the States for 3 minutes? That would be a hefty price. Coincidentally, it's actually airing on Channel 4 in Canada, but has no parallel with the NBC network here in the United States. Now, the trailer is incredibly well-written, but more importantly, what trumps that is the footage. The footage is just phenomenal. So obviously, this is radio, and I can post the link on the Insight archive page in summary, so you can actually just go on, or you can Google this, certainly. But we're going to play you something that's becoming more and more popular. It's become in vogue in the last 5-8 years, much more so. Audio description. Michelle Spitz, woman of her word, is one of the premier audio description voiceover person in the business. And she brought this to my attention because I had seen the video and she's like, oh, there's an audio description as well. So an audio description piece basically means for someone who's blind or visually impaired, obviously they can't see the screen or a theater or actually coming soon, maybe artwork. So this is described via a voiceover person. So we're going to play the actual audio description of this. Now, keep in mind, it's 3 minutes and it's going to go rather quickly because the VO person is incredible, but they're probably only describing maybe a third of what you can visually see because there are so many different fast cuts to different sports and different athletes doing incredibly mind-boggling acts of defeat and heroism and you name it. So here we are. This is the Canadian Paralympics trailer that airs in Canada, and this is the audio description version.
All right, folks, strap in. A drum fills the screen. But the drumsticks are in the feet of a man with no arms. A 10-piece swing band joins in, featuring a one-armed bass player and a blind pianist. A lead singer in a blue suit and trilby performs a spin in a wheelchair.
Yes, I can suddenly.
The lead singer rolls off the stage and onto a road, racing alongside British Paralympian Hannah Cockcroft.
Take a look, what do you see?
Then an athlete with one leg hops an impressive high jump. Striking images of people doing things with their feet, from a mother lifting her baby to a man doing donuts in a car around the band. A series of wheelchair users, from ballroom dancers to wheelchair rugby players who collide. Ouch! The singer rolls into a black and white scene, complete with graceful amputee tap dancers, a pianist with partially formed arms, tap dancing prosthetic legs, and a chorus line of girls elegantly displaying their stumps. The singer dons a crash helmet and smashes through the set wall. A starter's pistol, Paralympic swimmers racing, then Blade Runner Richard Whitehead sprinting on a track. A rock band appears in the middle of a wheelchair basketball game. A guitarist with one hand rocks out, while the lead guitarist plays a solo with his feet. A blind footballer lifts a finger to his lips. Blind footballers score a goal. Back of the net.
Yes, I can.
A series of people shout, yes, I can, while showing their abilities, including Paralympic swimmer Ellie Simmons, Paralympic sprinter Libby Clegg, a Paralympic shot putter and cyclist, wheelchair multi-Paralympian David Weir, a pilot with no arms, a gymnast with one hand, a graduate with Down syndrome, a ballerina with a prosthetic leg, three Paralympic powerlifters, a deaf signer and a breakdancer. Phew, did you get all that? A careers advisor talks to a boy in a wheelchair.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can!
The boy is now a Paralympics GB wheelchair rugby player and crashes into an opponent. A rock climber with one arm missing below the elbow. Martial artist kicking ass. Then heartwarming footage of children using prosthetic limbs at home and at school. The band plays at the top of a mega ramp in a stadium as a man in a wheelchair performs a death-defying stunt. And a man with partially formed arms brushes his teeth. We're the superhumans. Rio 2016 Paralympics, Channel 4, the UK Paralympic broadcaster. That's just awesome.
That is incredibly awesome. Yes, I can. How empowered do you feel? So that's a trailer. That is a 3-minute trailer. Can you imagine the energy and the excitement and the compelling athleticism and the sports that you can imagine in the Paralympic Games? That's what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen. It is incredible. Do me a favor. Do yourself a favor and do every athlete underneath the sun with the disability a favor. Email NBC, WNBC. I'm sure there's a general info email on their website, and I'm sure maybe we can find this before the end of the show and I can give that to you. Please implore them, implore that they air the Paralympics in prime time. What they're doing is they're going to be streaming it live, and they will also will be having it on, I believe, one of their other channels, sister station channels. But it would be great to have the Paralympics air live on national TV every night during the actual games, the Paralympic Games. Now, they don't have to do 3-4 hours a night. I would settle for even 30 minutes. An hour would be terrific. Can you feel it? It's palpable. I mean, the energy. And why not? Why should we discount the athleticism and the time, the sweat, the energy, the heartbreak, the money every one of these athletes puts into their skill set? Because I know we all know it comes down to money. Why not have Citibank, who's footing the bill for these ads, obviously, join with other networks or other sponsors and foot the bill for a 30-minute? It could be, you can plaster the names of these sponsors all over. I don't care. But the feedback, I imagine, do this once, NBC. Do this once. I guarantee you that in 2 years, you will take it if you have the rights for the games. I think they do have the rights for the games for the next X amount of years, 6 or 8 years, that I imagine this will go tenfold in terms of coverage because it really is incredible to see. I've covered so many Paralympic trial events. I've never actually gone to the games. I've done many Paralympic trials, interviewing the athletes as a commentator, etc. It's incredible stuff, and I urge you to do so. And also go on YouTube and check out that video, the 3-minute trailer for the Paralympics. It's a Canadian video, and all you have to do is put out information. So, you know, as I mentioned to you, he's a passionate person who's a disability advocate. He was the program director of social services, training coordinator, and special camp fair coordinator for Resources for Children with Special Needs, Inc., known as RCSN. And prior to RCSN, Gary was a special needs coordinator for the Brooklyn Children's Museum, a multi-sensory interactive learning environment. I'm so pleased to welcome Gary to the show. Hey, Gary, how are you, my friend?
I am great. It's my pleasure to be here today.
So what do you think about the Paralympics before we get into your life?
Oh, you know, anytime I do a workshop with parents of kids with disabilities, I always start by saying, tell me something wonderful about your child. Tell me about talents. Tell me about skills. Tell me about abilities. And they're often shocked because often people are just talking about the special needs mm-hmm. and what kind of interventions the children need. And I give them an opportunity to say, you know what? there's a lot more to my child than just a label of disability. And I think that's what this is all about. That's what the Paralympics is about. It's not about the disability. It's about emphasizing their abilities and their talents and their
and
skills.
Shedding that label.
Absolutely. And their passions. And their passions.
How have the experiences for people with disabilities, we're focusing on students today, mostly, changed in the last 15, 20 years as a person who's been an educator, a workshop, and a training instructor? How has the experience changed in terms of their environment in schools?
Yeah, I think that they have a lot more role models. I think that life is more optimistic because they see possibilities. I think they're seeing it in the media. They're learning about performers that they didn't know who had learning disabilities and had other types of special needs. This is part of history. You know, we teach children history in school. And when you went to school, when I went to school, I don't think I ever learned about people who had disabilities. So where were the role models? Did I know that we had a president of the United States who had a physical disability? Did I know that Franklin Roosevelt was in a wheelchair? Nobody knew this, you know. And I think that that's a major way that it's changed. I think that kids today kind of have come out of the closet in a way as far as having a disability and seeing a positive future for themselves because the role models are out there in TV, the movies, books. In the past, I think when a person with a disability was represented, there was sometimes an evil shadow to it. If you look at some of the old Walt Disney cartoons. Kids grew up and seeing that Captain Hook was the evil. He was a person who was an amputee. Mm. He was missing an arm.
Sort of a noir image to it, nefarious tag.
Exactly. And I think that's what's changed. And you had shows like Glee, who a lot of the teenagers watched Glee, and there were characters with disabilities on Glee who weren't there to elicit sympathy. They were there because they were just an intricate part of the show. They happened to have friends. They were part of the group, the social group. So I think attitudes are starting to change. Mm. We're starting to see commercials with people with disabilities.
Target.
Right. And the commercial's not concentrating on the disability.
No.
It happens to be a mom who happens to be using a wheelchair or somebody.
Or I love the one where the father, looks like he's a stay-at-home father, is using a Swiffer to try to dust the ceiling fan, and it's not focusing on his disability. But obviously, if you hone in, it's great, and it should be the way it is. And I love the fact that even Sesame Street, Channel 13, incorporates kids with disabilities, even if they're in even part of the background, just as extras, as a lot of those shots are.
Historically speaking, I think it was Mr. Rogers who first started to include children with disabilities his show.
That's right. So I do believe we're making progress. As a matter of fact, I came home the other day, my wife got the mail before I did, and there's a picture of a man wearing, very fit man wearing, I don't know, Hanes or jockey underwear. And I'm like, I don't need any underwear. And then I realized that he has a prosthetic leg. And then on a note said, get him on your show.
Right.
And I'm like, wait a minute. Does she want me to interview him because, you know, he's obviously a model who's doing great things, or she just wants to meet him?
Right. But you see, the success of that was that the first thing you saw was that, okay, here's a model modeling underwear. Then you noticed he had a prosthetic.
Yes. And that's the way it should
be. And that's the way it should be.
And actually, since we're on that, we should also give people sort of the political correctness. It is a model with a disability, not a disabled model.
Exactly. Because he's perfectly capable of being a model. His modeling ability is fine. You know, and having a disability is just part of who he is. He may be a person who enjoys music, who likes to go dancing, who eats chicken, and happens to have a disability. It's all part of the package.
How much in your workshops and trainings, Gary Shulman, is vernacular a pivotal point?
You know, I always say to parents, and they understand this, and I say this to professionals a lot, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will devastate me. And if you say something the wrong way, a parent may never want to speak to you again. You know, I say to a professional once called me and said, Gary Shulman, he said, can you please give me a recommendation? I'm trying to find a socialization group for a child. He's hyper. And I said, that's not the appropriate term. He's a child who happens to have an attention deficit disorder. He's a child first. His name is Billy. If you look a little further into it, I bet he loves music. He loves dancing. Let's look for a program that emphasizes what his passion is. But he's not the hyper child. So, you know, terminology really can make or break a relationship with a professional and with other parents. But having said that, I once had a mom who called me and said, Gary, I'm looking for an after-school program. I said, well, what's your child's special need? What is your child's disability? Oh, my kid's a cripple. Now,
The parents saying,
oh, my kid's a cripple. Now, the one thing as a professional that I did not do is I did not say, oh, how horrible. You shouldn't call your child.
Of course.
You model. You say, oh, your child has a physical disability. What physical disability? And for a while, she kept saying, oh, my child's a cripple. But then she started to listen, and by the just the modeling, you never scold somebody for the words that they've been taught. If we think about the words that we've been taught, you know, I grew up in East New York, Brooklyn, and my parents on Saturday would say, let's go for chinks. Now, growing up, yes. Hearing that word, it wasn't until I was an adult mm-hmm. that somebody said to me, because it was part of my education,
that
I learned this through
environment, sure.
Gary, you realize that chinks is a derogatory term, and it's referring to the fact that a person who happens to be Chinese has slanty eyes. That's what a chink means, is a little slant, a little crack. I was devastated, but I'm not an evil person, and I realize sometimes we say words that we're taught without necessarily making us horrible people. It's all part of sensitizing the world. It's all part of educating
Lack of
the
education,
world.
Ignorance, etc.
Right.
But once you have that information, if you still choose to go with it, then it's completely
ignorance.
Then
it's completely different. You know, how many years did we use the word mentally retarded?
Handicapped.
Right, handicapped. If people realize the derivation of handicap was that years ago, the concept was is that somebody who had a disability, the only way they could make a living was to stand there with a cap in their hand begging for money. When you explain...
Hand to cap,
right,
exactly.
So when you explain the derivation of some of these words, people go, ah, aha, yeah, words do... You know, and sometimes if I don't have a disability and somebody says, oh, here comes bald Gary, well... You know, I'm so much more than the fact that I have no hair.
Oh, you don't? Well, you got to remember, I'm visually impaired.
Well, yes.
I just thought you had a tight haircut.
Actually, I have a very, 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 very high forehead. I always tell parents the reason I have no hair is because there's so much going on in my brain that it's constantly pushing the hair out.
The heat projection is immeasurable.
Absolutely, absolutely. But
how important do you think is vernacular to broadening people's mind? Is it just changing their habits and what they say, or is it... Is there more depth to it?
I think it absolutely changes perception. I used to volunteer at a hospital in Brooklyn, just kind of giving out books to people. And there was a teenager who happened to have Down syndrome sitting in one of the little cubicles. She was waiting to see a doctor, and a nurse walked by. And I hear her yelling, oh, Dr. Smith, there's a Down's child in the next room. There's a Down's child. And I looked at this young woman's face, who was completely cognizant that she was being referred to as a Down's child, not Susie Smith, not Becky Jones, who's there because she has a bad cough, but a Down's child. And I just saw her face get devastated. You know, words can really hurt when you don't see the humanity in that person. And we also conjure up these pictures based upon labels. And that's such a disservice to a person. You know, if we say, okay, the next child I'm going to be working with has an autism spectrum disorder. Means nothing, can give you generalities, but it really means nothing about that human being that you're about to work with, who also has a passion for rockets, who also loves to sing, but has a lot of socialization difficulties, and that's what we're going to work on. But a label can paint a stereotypical picture, and that's devastating.
It's so dehumanizing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But the best way you couch it is by doing the model aspect, you know, just by using the proper words and terminology and applications, which is great. Now, in terms of what you do for a living, you're an advocate.
Right.
You're brought into schools, forward-thinking schools, and that's probably a luxury for a lot of schools. Now, aside from the schools that you teach and present at, how many and how much of the nation do you think needs to be educated with the information armed with the tools that you have?
I
imagine a majority.
Yeah, I mean, everybody needs to be sensitized about the fact that diversity is not evil. You know, and I'm talking about diversity in a very, very general term. Mm. I think
LGBTQ, you name it.
Everything. If we look today at... if we look today at what's going on, you know, and I'm not going to turn it into a political show. You know, everybody has their own political feeling, but...
Hey, we're progressive here, Gary. Let it rip.
Yeah, let it rip. Well, I mean, you know, we have choices this year. There are people speaking out there very loudly about the fact that they do not believe diversity on all its various levels is a good thing. And there are other people who say, yeah, diversity makes the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. I'm going
to
interrupt you 1 second because we're going to be talking about a gentleman who works for the Mighty. You know the Mighty.com, great website, who's talking about Donald Trump. He's got a disability, this writer, and how he is just devastated about what he did to the New York Times reporter.
Oh, I can't fathom. I mean, it's unbelievable to me that he would do that. But, you know, I don't really want to talk about
politics. Of course. No, I just wanted to insert that.
But I think that it just points out that we have a choice in this country. We have a choice in this world, either to accept the fact that everybody is different. Hmm. I mean, one of the activities that I do, there's one of my workshops is called We All Belong. And I start by just having everybody stick their hand up in the air and we sing a little song and then we compare our hands to each other. You know, we see our hands are different sizes, they're different shapes, they're different colors, we have different nails, some people have decorated fingers, some... Bottom line, we're different. Okay, and then we share how we are like. And you start on that level, and it's the same thing with children with and without disabilities. We're alike in a lot more ways than we are different. Strip down everything else to the basics of what
true.
A human is, and a human wants to be loved, a human wants to belong.
We're just defined by our experiences in life.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about some of your workshop titles.
Okay.
One of those is Stares, Glares, and Hurtful Words.
Oh, yeah.
What to Do. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that is something that brings a lot of tears to the parents, and it also raises a lot of important issues. The most important issue, I think, is the fact that staring, if I'm staring at something, you know, I always ask the parents, I say, have you stared at somebody today, or has somebody stared at you? And inevitably they say, oh, yeah, I stared at somebody. Well, why did you stare at them? Well, that she was wearing an unusual hairdo. I said, well, so what does that mean? Are you an evil person because you stared at somebody? No, I don't think I'm an evil person. Said, that's right. You're not. Staring is a natural reaction to something you just don't quite understand.
Curiosity.
So step one is take this as an opportunity to educate and sensitize that person. If you feel like you want to, somebody sitting there staring at your child who happens to look different than other people's children, who is behaving differently, you have a choice now. Either you can educate, sensitize that person if you feel like you want to take that time, or you can get angry. And a lot of the parents look at me and they say, you know, I never thought about it that way. I just thought that it's rude. It's, you know, it's improper. They shouldn't be looking at my child. And then I bring them back to the fact that, have you stared at people? And they always say, yes, we do. Are you a rude, disgusting, horrible human being that nobody would ever want to be
analogy.
Friends with?
Good analogy, sure.
And they, no, that's not me. I say, so why would you assume that they have all these horrible intentions? They may never have seen a child who has fetal alcohol syndrome, who has autism spectrum disorder, or they have learned, or they have thought about that, but they've never really met a child like that. And maybe they have a misconception. Now is your opportunity to say, I know, I had one parent I used to work with, whenever somebody would stare at her child, who actually had a terminal illness, he was only going to be on Earth for about 5 years. So he didn't have much time. She wanted to make sure he was included in the community. And somebody would really stare, maybe pull their child away from him because he looked very different. She would go over to that parent with her child and say, I notice you're staring at my child. And then with a smile on her face, she would say, would you like to meet him?
Great.
As simple as that.
Knock down that barrier.
If you want to ask me any questions about why he looks the way he does, I'll be happy to answer. It's not contagious. What he needs is a friend.
And who has the most problem with that? The adult. The child will be curious and then move on. And the next time they'll probably walk up to that child or with a child or an adult with a disability and say, hey, I know what you have.
Absolutely.
You know, because that's what they do.
There was a play, South Pacific, and there was a song that said, you've got to be taught to hate and fear. I truly believe we're all
so
born loving, you know, and then something happens as you're growing. Yeah.
Some other workshop titles that you have. My papers just got discombobulated here. Where did it go? Oh, it's right here. Look at that. How about that? Communicating with parents, which is huge.
Yeah, it's huge. Again, it goes back to what you say, how you say it, and always understand that if a parent seems angry, chances are they're not angry with you. They're angry with their situation. So all you need to do is take a deep breath and respond with kindness. I mean, that's my main point in doing that, communicating with parents, is that kindness has to be the framework under which you function in this world, especially if you're working with parents of kids with special needs.
Absolutely. And it's easily said, Gary, as you and I understand, but an experience, but it can be so infuriating. And you have the choices, which you mentioned. You can either take a deep breath and walk away, mm-hmm. or take a deep breath and face it. Either way is your choice, and it's the right choice, whichever, you know, applies to you. But the thing that happens is a lot of people, I think, let it fester, and they let those negative talk inside kind of steamroll and get out of control.
I think a lot of people also have their own issues. They've had a fight that morning. Mm-hmm. They're looking to get it out on somebody. But you know what I say to them? You got to leave that at home when you're speaking to these parents, because they're looking for a helping hand, and you don't know what the situation is in their household. You have no idea. You might be the only support they have found so far. So don't devastate them.
You just never know the battle somebody's fighting.
No, you never know.
We All Belong is another workshop you have.
Yeah, that really is a basic inclusion workshop as to the value. You know, I don't teach people how to work with children with disabilities. I teach them how everybody benefits when there is diversity in their program, when you have all kinds of children learning from each other just by being friends. When I taught Head Start many, many years ago when I had hair.
That was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it, Gary?
That was 2 weeks ago, yeah. By one or two more years. There was a little girl who came into my classroom who happened to be born without eyeballs. You know, when I'm doing a workshop, I always say, who's a parent in this room? Okay, imagine looking at your baby for the first time and noticing two empty sockets. It was a rare syndrome.
Devastating.
It was devastating. But be that as it may, you go on, you love the child. She came into my classroom. There was a child, Anthony, who probably had attention deficit disorder. He was all over the place. He made Elise his best friend, and she was blind. Anthony was this very aggressive, kind of active child. And 6 months into being her friend, I noticed he was staring at her. And I turned to my teacher's assistant. I said, Myrna, look at Anthony. And he was staring right at her face. And then he said, he was from the West Indies. And he said, hold on, Elise, me gonna fix your eye. And I said, oh, Myrna, what's he gonna do? He took his 4-year-old finger. Her eye had gone over to the side. She went through a growth spurt, so her sockets got bigger and her prosthetic eye moved to the side. So all he was looking at was white. Now, he only saw that he had a friend in need.
That's great.
I, as an adult, probably would have said, yuck, I would never do. He took his little finger and he moved her eye, her prosthetic eye, until he saw the pupil again.
Unencumbered.
This is what just contact among children who are different can do. He saw a friend in need. He helped her.
This is normal for them.
This is normal. You help your friend, whatever it takes. He didn't say,
we're the ones with or onions with all these layers and ideas and notions and...
Of course.
You name it. I read something the other day, and I wanted to run some of these by you. Secrets of a Special Education Teacher, or teachers, I should say. And give me your feedback on some of these, because some of these are very, very good. Now, these are quotes from teachers submitted. Sometimes the hardest part is convincing the kids I work with that they are capable of so much more than they give themselves credit for.
I have heard conversations between parents and teachers where a teacher will say, well, but he does wash his hands. He does it all the time. And he doesn't do that at home. And sometimes we have parents who are very overprotective.
Enablers,
so that the child feels that they don't have these capabilities, and you need somebody who just refuses to do it for them. That's probably the best thing you can do. Now, I'm not a parent of a child with a disability, so I can never say I know how you feel to a parent of a child with a disability. But I think if you just sit back and do less, it's probably a lot more for these kids.
Absolutely. With the proper guidance, safe environment,
sure.
And, you know, I do the same thing with my son and daughter. I give them the tools that they need. At his disposal and let him run with it.
Right.
And when they do something wrong, then they are chastised or instructed, you know. But, you know, it's a natural curiosity. But, you know, when you protect them and let them live in a bubble, they're just going to be joining the millennials and not leaving your house after graduation.
And you do not have to be somebody who was labeled as having a disability completely ineffective, dependent human being. And it really has to do with parenting. So perhaps good parenting means treating an individual with respect and helping them be as independent as possible.
And with decency.
Yeah.
Gary Shulman is my guest. My name is Mark Crowell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Gary is a special needs consultant, trainer, and disability advocate. And we're talking about some of the secrets of special education teachers. I found this on the Muddy.com website, which is a great website for any disabilities, mental health, you name it. So check it out, the Muddy.com. One of the other descriptions was, my job doesn't end when the bell rings or when the children leave the classroom or even a holiday vacation. Of course, we all understand that because we're passionate about what we do.
Right.
My students teach me more than I will ever teach them. I wish parents knew that we don't always like the labels put on kids either. Your child is more than a diagnosis. And you alluded to that before.
Yeah. And I think that you learn so much about what it means to be human. You learn about compassion. You learn about patience.
Empathy.
Empathy, kindness. I think you also learn to appreciate a lot of the things that you have in your life when you're working with individuals who perhaps don't have exactly what you have. So that's another reason why diversity is so important. It just gives you more of an appreciation of what life is all about.
And human spirit, going back to your communication aspect, I mean, you know, it depends on their disability, but there are so many different forms of communication. Even just with this young boy fixing his friend's prosthetic eye.
That's communication. That's love.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Love.
Yeah. We want the world for your child, just like you do. We wish we could provide all the services and supports you want for your child, but there aren't many things beyond our control. I'm sorry, but there are many things beyond our control. We do the best we can while fighting for what each student needs.
You know, that to me really rings a bell, because I think a lot of families for some reason feel that all they're going to get for their child is what can be provided within the context of the school. And there's so many support services outside of the educational realm. I mean, that's a lot of what I talk about. I'm a family support specialist. And there are entities, there are governmental programs, there are fraternal organizations, there are after-school programs, there are respite services, there are financial programs. And families seek a lot of this information from the one place that they know, and that's often the school. But it's really behooves them to look outside the school so that they're getting everything that they could possibly get to support their family and support their child with a disability.
And lastly, written from teachers about teaching students with disabilities, our students are just like any other child. They have incredible hearts and big personalities. They have extraordinary talents. They have good days and not so good days. Though they may have behavioral challenges that, oh no, it's a cliffhanger. That does not mean they are bad or lazy. Though they may learn differently, they can learn. Don't underestimate or pity them. And most importantly, don't limit them.
Yeah.
Well said.
I agree. I think that, again, anybody who has, anyone who's called, and I hate this term, but the term is now typically developing or neurotypically developing, which means you're not labeled as having a disability. Even if you're neurotypically developing, there's a way that you learn best. If you're going to sit down and tell me to read a manual in order to put something together, it's going to be a failure. If you just show it to me, I will do it. And I think that goes for everybody. So the trick is finding out what the modality of strength is for every child.
Gary Shulman, we just have a few more minutes, but I just want to give your get your perspective on a few things.
Sure.
National funding in terms of schools for special ed programs, et cetera. Obviously, they could always use a great deal more money earmarked.
Yeah, I think that this is the era of technology. Technology costs money. There are new things happening day to day that could so benefit children, could so benefit anybody with a disability, and we have to get that into the schools early on. Augmentative communication devices, mobility devices, anything that enhances their capability of learning and being as a fully productive human being as possible. But again, that costs a lot of money. But families sometimes feel that that's something that they have to beg for. No, if it's appropriate in order for their children to function in that environment, that's an entitlement. Regardless of the cost, that's an entitlement. And so part of this is educating the parents about their rights. And once they know their rights, there is nothing more powerful than a parent who knows their rights and very calmly states their rights. I always say to families, if you lose it, you're not going to get it. If you stay calm and you sit there with a pen and a piece of paper and you're writing down names and you're calmly stating what your child is entitled to, no matter what it costs, you're going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're
your child's
well
going
informed.
To
benefit. You have an arsenal of information and you know, resources at your disposal. That's great.
Yeah.
Now, on that note, we should segue right into that. What are, and there's no easy answer to this because this is a macro question,
mm-hmm.
the best ways and avenues in a general sense for parents and maybe persons in the field of disability as well to get as much information as possible?
Oh, I think that's a great question. And my immediate response is if you are not linked with a parent support group, immediately link with other parents who have children with your child's disability, because you're going to come across much more experienced parents who've already been around the corner 20 different times.
Save yourself lots of time.
Save yourself a lot of time. Link yourself with a local advocacy organization. Shop around. If you don't like the person you've been linked with, who's your case manager, your service coordinator, you know, you go to Macy's, you don't like the blouse, you go someplace else and you buy another blouse. So link with a professional that you can communicate with. Link with a family support group. Find out where other children in the neighborhood with disabilities are going to after-school programs, weekend programs. Get involved with those organizations. Create an extended family for yourself. And that's the best way to empower yourself and learn about your rights and entitlements.
And I would imagine anything that you learn that you think is not common knowledge in your realm or purview, put it online and share it. Because biggest thing, parents sharing, as you said, alluded to, because there are so many different nuances, and you can spend hours and hours of countless time spending and doing research and just make it easy for other people.
It's a very interesting point. At one of my workshops, I always spend some time asking parents to share a treasure that they've found in their neighborhood, like a karate program.
Sure.
And sometimes the reaction is they put their heads down and they get very quiet. And then I realize they're not sharing because they're afraid the other parents are going to find out about that wonderful karate program that takes kids with autism. They're going to go running there, register their children so that your child, when you go to register, is not going to have a slot anymore.
Exactly.
And I make it real clear. I said, look, you know how each other feels. You know how desperately important it is to share this kind of information, to link with these programs. You got to share. If anything, help raise money for that program so they can take more children
in. Or create your own program.
Create your own program.
There are so many different ways.
But you got to share the treasures.
Yes, absolutely. And finally, Gary Shulman, this is a big deal, and this may be a little bit of out of your expertise because we're talking about students who age out of schools.
Mm-hmm.
They can't go to college due to their disability. Where do you see this going in terms of how do we correct this and give them maybe a role in society where they just don't have to go to a home?
Well, one of my workshops is called Transitioning to Adult Services, where we talk about all the different options. Depending upon the level of functioning of that individual, first of all, a lot more colleges are looking for children with disabilities who don't even have what we call that regular diploma. Mm. They're creating programs, support services. Every college has a special needs
office. What some of those schools are those? Leslie College?
Leslie is one of them, but every college has an office for students with disabilities. There are quite a number of them in the New York City area. I mean, families can contact me and I can give them. There's a database called Think College. Think College is a nationwide database of colleges that proactively are looking for individuals with disabilities. There's the Heath Resource Center, which is a clearinghouse of scholarships for individuals with disabilities to go to college. Not everybody has to go to college. If we have an individual with a disability passionate about computers, there are state agencies like here in New York called Access VR that will help pay for that individual to go to a special program and become more skilled in working with computers, not necessarily going to college. There are actually employment agencies. We have one in New York just for people with Asperger's syndrome, because there are certain companies that have seen the value in the kind of qualities that a person with Asperger's syndrome brings to the job market. So there are a lot of different options. Here we have the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities, which will fund all kinds of job programs. We have JobPath. We have a lot of different options. And this pertains to every single state. There are similar programs in every state. So the future is as rosy as our ability to tap into this information. And if you don't know where to get the information, there are advocates like me who get great delight out of sharing this kind of information.
You can hear it in Gary's voice, correct?
Yes.
Outstanding.
Keeps me young.
Yes, Gary Shulman, thank you so much for your time. Your incredible work for how many years now? 30 years?
Over 40.
Over 40. My God, you don't look a day over 40.
I don't know how that's possible when I'm 25.
I'm not good at math, but there's something wrong there, Gary. You can reach Gary Shulman at Gary Shulman. That's Shulman.com. JIMDO.com. That's GaryShulman.JimDo.com. Gary, all the best to you, and thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
When Insight returns, we're going to talk about Donald Trump. Yes, how Donald Trump is getting slammed from people with disabilities and so much more. My name's Mark Farrell. We'll be right back. And we are back. Hopefully you are a little more informed now since 44 minutes of the show have elapsed. It's Thursday in New York City or wherever you are. Got big plans for the weekend? I do, actually. I'm going to be volunteering at a blind surfing camp. Yes, blind surfing camp at the Jersey Shore in New Jersey. About 25 surfers are signed up, and I'm really looking forward to it. I have no idea how it's organized. I imagine there's going to be a lot of lifeguards on duty. I'm not sure if I'm going to give it a whirl or not. I actually tried it once to surf, and my friends kind of played a trick on me because I have a hairy chest, and I lay down on a surfboard without a shirt on, and I left half my chest on the board.
Ouch!
Yeah, it hurt. So listen, I got to tell you something. From the How Cool Is This files, we need a new sounder. Jesse and I are going to work on that. We need an opener from this.
From the How Cool Is This files.
Check this out. JCPenney, you shop there? It doesn't matter. Check this out. This is funny. JCPenney hosted a back-to-school shopping event for shoppers with autism last Sunday in Texas, a store in Dallas, opened early to hold a judgment-free shopping experience. It was a two-hour shopping event and designed to accommodate the needs of those with autism. How incredible was this? So what they did was they dimmed the lighting. It's about 50%. The music was turned off, and JCPenney kept the thermostat a little lower for the air conditioning. So it was totally, totally friendly, an environment that was very conducive for children and adults with autism. And a spokesperson for JCPenney confirmed that the company is looking into expanding the event into more stores. And also a big thanks to Gary Shulman, who was just on before our break, disability advocate. He was actually telling me that AMC Movie Theater has a lot of sensory movie nights and days for children with disabilities where the lights are up higher, the music's lower, you can have popcorn roll around on the floor, whatever your child wants to do, and it's all very, very, very cool. How about that? So I want to talk to you about what took place, probably about 2 months ago. You know, Donald Trump, he has many, many blunders that he's been blamed for and has done in the past several weeks and months, and I guess it's about three-quarters of a year now. But Serge Kovaleski is the writer, reporter for the New York Times, and Mr. Trump mocked him very, very poorly. Such bad taste. And so this is a letter from a gentleman who writes for themighty.com. And my papers, I'm sorry, are just in very, very poor condition today. His name is Brooks Fitz. Brooks Fitz. He's a contributor on disability for themighty.com. And I'm going to read this letter to you because it's an eye-opening letter, and it's so true about Mr. Trump that I just had to share it to you. So it says, "Dear Mr. Trump, I want to first take the time to introduce myself and to give you a little background on where I'm coming from. My name is Brooke Fitz, and I'm a 19-year-old from Raleigh, North Carolina. North Carolina is shaping up to be a battleground state this year, and its electoral votes could make or break a candidate. Wake up, Mr. Trump. Wink, wink. This upcoming presidential election will be my first voting, and as I cast my ballot, I will have only one distinct image on my mind: the image of you mocking New York Times reporter Serge Kovaleski on his disability and then refusing to apologize for it. I was born with cerebral palsy, a disability which makes my hamstrings tight and causes me to walk with a slight limp. Growing up with cerebral palsy, it's hard, as I often felt like the outsider and was frequently cast aside because of my differences. Understandably, it's terrible, but understandably. However, I've grown up to be thankful for my cerebral palsy, not because it's made me harder to walk, but because it's helped me build character in a world where emphasis is too often placed on physical. My cerebral palsy has taught me it's what's inside that truly matters. So when you're up on the stage and mocked Mr. Kovaleski for his disability, you mocked me. You not only mocked me, you mocked the nearly 53 millions who live with a disability. Americans who make contributions, Americans who love their country, and Americans who will show up to the polls this November. Right? Well put. Continues on saying, I am writing this letter to you on behalf of every American who lives with a disability and requesting an apology. Regardless of whether you apologize for what you did or not, I hope you at least recognize that your actions were wrong. You are running to be president of every American, those with disabilities and those without. I would encourage you to spend a day with someone who lives with a disability. You might just learn something about character, gift, and true determination. So well put there. More than anything, though, it might just make you think twice before you go up on stage and mock us for something we have no control over. Sincerely, Brooks Fitz, again, contributor on disability for the Mighty, MIGHTY.com. Well put, Brooks. I really appreciate you putting out those words for every person out there with and without a disability, because it's all about tact. It's all about treating people the way they want to be treated. He is someone without tact, without grace, without, he's got a lot of dignity and he's got a hell of a lot of pride, but the way he treats people, it's just unfathomable. I'm not even going to give him any more time here because we understand, and if you don't understand what he did was wrong, then I think you have an issue. But I imagine everybody listening to this show certainly empathizes with Mr. Brooks, the writer, and certainly realizes how that's wrong. Because I imagine if you were a parent and Mr. Trump made fun of your son or wife, spouse, mother, father, you name it, colleague, that would be deplorable, right? You certainly would. So I also wanted to bring up to you that there is, and it's an incredible time now for people with disabilities because, for example, this weekend, as I mentioned to you, there is a an event for people who are blind or visually impaired to learn how to surf. And also this weekend, there's a kids' triathlon for kids with disabilities. And this is just one weekend and one part of New Jersey. So it just kind of is just heartwarming to realize that there's so much opportunities with people for people with disabilities. If you Google sports activities, programs, you name it, and as Gary Shulman alluded to, college programs, training programs, et cetera, there's so much opportunity, so much more than it was 5 and 10 years ago. And the fact that it's so accessible nowadays in terms of finding out this information is great because the internet is just, you know, exploding. Social medias, media platforms, sharing all this information about races, just how I mentioned. It's just a great way to make, first of all, if your child or a partner has a disability and they don't want to partake in it in terms of maybe it's a competition, they could volunteer. They can just go and watch and get inspired. It's so empowering to watch an event of this caliber. I'm going to go this weekend and volunteer, as I mentioned, and maybe perhaps my son will go with me as well. And it's a great way to, even if you don't know somebody with a disability, to expose somebody, maybe a child, or just to volunteer, because it's a great, incredibly giving, loving community to be involved with. As I'm sure you know, because anything that you volunteer for, whether it's maybe at your local church, raising money for your local high school and you're doing a car wash, whatever the case may be, it's very gratifying to volunteer and to give back. And I think we all have a civic duty, certainly, to give back no matter what we do. Matter of fact, I read a great quote the other day. And if I can get it correct, it'll probably sound good. If I don't, I'll sound like more of a jerk. But I think it goes like this. Success is failure if not shared. Something along my lines. And I think that's so true. Success is failure if not shared. Makes sense, right? I mean, we can be successful in many different ways. And we're not just have to, I think we're more measuring it in terms of monetarily with that statement. But if you have a lot of money and you're doing well, good for you. But it's also how you share your wealth, wealth of knowledge, and maybe the way you can share some of your monetary funds. giving people opportunities. Maybe there's someone that you know in your neighborhood who would love to go to college but can't get afford it, or can't afford the books, or can't afford to live in the dorms, and they have to drive 2 hours each way to go to college. And so you're going to give them an opportunity to live in a dorm. There's so many different ways. As a matter of fact, there's a good friend of mine who gives to charity every year. And I forget whether it's $5,000 or $10,000 she gives away every year. And she finds someone either through word of mouth, through the grapevine, or through a friend who needs money for something very significant in her life. I was with her actually a few years ago. We're actually sitting at a bar in New York City having a great meal. And very quickly, I'm going to tell the story. We're starting to talk to this bartender, very nice, very attractive young lady. And actually, she was a single mother. She was trying to go back to college, and she said she's going to have to take a semester off to continue bartending to earn enough money to go back to school. P.S. My friend Jody gave her the money so she can go back to school that semester instead of having to take a semester off. So things like that are little things. And of course, you don't have to give that much money. You can give the gift of time. But making a difference in someone's lives is incredible. And hopefully, you know, this show has made a difference in your life. Hopefully not. We didn't bore you to tears. I try not to bore you to tears, you know. Hey, we talked about some great things today. We had Gary Shulman on. Thank you so much to Gary Shulman. He's a great advocate for people with disabilities. Just a genuine, great guy. And I thank him immensely for his time. I thank all the athletes representing all the countries for doing what they do, regardless whether you bring home a medal or not. You're exercising your dream to be on a world stage doing what you love, and there's nothing better than that. My name is Mark Farrell. If you'd love to have me speak at your school, college, corporation, or organization, please reach out to me at markfarrellmotivation.com. That's Mark Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. And there's a video on their website and much more. Special thanks to Zach, Jesse, and producer extraordinaire Luke. Have a great day.